Here's another listener essay.
This is Infants on Thrones.
Listener essay.
Listener essay. Listener essay.
Welcome back to Infants on Thrones. I'm Glenn Ostlund, and today's listener essay comes from Miriam and is titled Claiming Individual Worth. Now, if you want to vote for this essay and give some private feedback to the author, visit our website. I'll give you the form letter pre-recorded detail message at the end of the episode today. But for now, take it away, Miriam.
Hello, infants. My essay is called Claiming Individual Worth. Sandy kept delicate glass-blown unicorns on her dresser. The walls of her room were covered in horse posters, her white metal-framed daybed by life-size unicorn print. To me, another 12-year-old, this was heaven. Outside her very own bedroom, though, the turmoil of a barely functioning family overwhelmed those private, delicate comforts. With eagerness, I would walk to their house, my best friend's house, a straight shot down my long suburban street, then left. I'd hop up onto the porch, knock, and stand there for an above-the-average moment that people generally stand at front porches after knocking or ringing the bell. Accustomed to waiting, I knew Sandy was spending those minutes while I waited behind the front door, covering her stoned and naked father with a blanket and scooting his pipe underneath the furniture. My patience was usually rewarded by Sandy's welcoming face, her sad sky blue eyes, beautifully large, but animated by my appearance. We'd quickly pass her dad as he gurgled an amiable greeting, beelining to the sanctuary of her bedroom. The unicorns never broke there in her house. In my case, those were things that only grown adults could keep, like the ceramic trinkets protected by the windows of my grandma's buffet. At my house, rowdy boys set the tone, and fancy things passed through like fruit flies multiplying in the warm summer months and dying out in winter. Sandy loved her dad. It's the roles which had reversed prematurely. She had become his caretaker, and he had mentally checked out of any sense of duty to the family. So when her mother filed for divorce, Sandy's world was devastated. I remember that day when she tearfully explained while we sat on a unicorn comforter. Her confiding to me this violent tearing apart of her family was punctuated by menarche. I was sitting in her room when she called me from the next. I passed her mother holding Sandy's newborn baby brother in the doorway of the parents' bedroom and stopped at the bathroom door. Sandy called again, and I went in. She sat there, staring at her underpants that had been pulled to her knees. I peered over and helped her identify the almost black, caked blood as the blood of her first period. She stared at the blood as if it poured forth from a wounded soul, one too large for stitches or band-aids. Out of all the details of her life and our friendship, this moment always stands out the most 30 years later. The heaviness of the moment weighed upon us, as if the entire universe had shifted within her body and beneath her feet. Sandy's extended family were active in a local evangelical church. Her meemaw and papa lived the next town over, with a house full of dogs and an above-ground swimming pool dominating their small suburban backyard. I would tag along to all sorts of places with Sandy, to her grandparents, to her cousins, lake house, to all-night adult parties where we would babysit children in a bedroom while the parents partied. I wish I could say this was a story about how my young woman's lessons remarkably changed Sandy's life through me. Yet it has taken me years to even retrospectively recognize the needs she had at the time. We did not talk over these traumatic changes in her life beyond the brief pronouncing of their existence. It was what it was. I didn't even know I should be telling my parents about sleepovers turned into babysitting for adult parties across town. Or about her father and then stepfather driving the way with carafes of wine between the seats. Only as I grew into an adult did I learn those things were inappropriate. For me, church was where the innermost importance of things was discussed the most and in detail. Songs left the most powerful and lasting imprints on my teenage soul. For I am of worth, of infinite worth, my Savior Redeemer loves me. Yes, I am of worth, of infinite worth, I'll be all He wants me to be. I will praise Him, I will serve Him, I will grow in His love, and fulfill my divine destiny. For my Savior, Redeemer, loves me. From I Am of Infinite Worth by Janice Cat Perry. By 16 years old, I had walked hundreds of miles on sidewalks with a sun of Texas at my back, watching my shadow and my silhouette. It always made my legs so long. Finally, as a teen, we had a full-length mirror in our house. That's when I learned that my legs weren't so long and my hips were wider than the shadows said. I became conscious of the impossibility of ever being magazine ad or mall mannequin beautiful. After I moved to the next town with a different school, away from Sandy and all our other friends, I preempted the inevitable rejection from my peers at school by, for the most part, rejecting them first. My circle of friends was small, and I intentionally shrunk my social life into a very small sphere. Despite making myself an obstacle in my own way, I still did tell myself something important. I accepted my body. I thanked God for my toes and knees and everything else and embraced me as I was. Finally, I had started telling myself that I was somebody. So finally, I could see other people as people too, even if I had reduced that number to a very few. Beyond the innate tribal politics that kids learn from very early on, people became individuals to me. P.T., Lee, Cindy, Laura, Chris, Joseph, Angie. Their feelings and sense of worth became real, meriting my protection and nourishment. We studied together, found sanctuary with each other by sharing a table at lunch, telling jokes, belonging. Now I recall my time as a naive, unaware witness of Sandy's suffering, and I wish I could go back and give her more so I could pass it on to her. Or I should say give me more so I could pass it on to her. As we both grew older, keeping in touch became more rare. In our 20s, she recounted her decision to never bring children into such a world. About 10 years later, we met over Mexican food, and I still did not have the clarity to seek some way to affirm her, validate her. We exchanged news and views and friendly acceptance of each other, but I could not turn back the page. It's only the last 5 years or so that I've understood as much about us. Being a mother made me see how environment can fundamentally influence us, for the good or bad. When my little newborns whined and cried and flexed their bodies to empty their bowels, I realized that this really was a painful physical struggle for them, that it most likely had been for me and everyone else. Our body senses being assaulted by their own functions, the pain of growth. With many children in our family, fairness became very important. Kindness became the rule. We have moved multiple times and lived abroad, making our children closer and more mindful of each other. They are friends. When my oldest daughter approached puberty, I saw flashes of being there with Sandy in that moment when the blood came. I thought about the new experience of tampons and pads and cramps and hot baths to relieve the cramps. My older daughters and I talked about it, how the uterine lining would shed itself, how it was there to provide nourishment to fertilize eggs, how our bodies would repeat this process every month for the decades that followed, how this was how it was for women. My focus was on full disclosure and on education for my daughters. Finally, when the first blood of my daughter's menarche came, I was unexpectedly taken aback by waves and waves of pure joy. This blood, my mother's blood, her mother's, Sandy's, and her mother's and hers, and on, across the world at that moment, and back throughout time, including the very first women, it all gelled and sealed humanity together. Rich, spilt blood punctuated all the months when human life grew in sealed and protected wombs, enlarging and developing, nourished by our blood, or our mother's blood. In our house, menarche has become a cause for celebration, not just the inconvenient condition we have to tolerate. We talk about it, we make red velvet cake and fill ourselves up with its frosted sponginess. We talk about everything. I told my girls about Sandy, about her own teen traumas, and how they can find support in our home and with each other by sharing their experiences, acknowledging them as real and important. When what reached through to my teen soul were mostly songs, now my own daughters in their youth have music too, but also conversation. We line the inside of our home with kindness and respect and communicating. We celebrate and commiserate. I hope they are nourished. Writing this, I finally understand how the me today wishes I could reach Sandy and give her what I did not have before. How the me today can see what I did not see then. Now that I know better and try to do better, I still want to go back and repair. Sandy and I live continents apart. She is a caring, responsible adult. She's made peace with her father. She's found a loving companion. I hope she is nourished. I think I'm ready to reach out and try to do all I can, but which isn't much, to be sure that she is nourished, that she feels and knows her own worth. If I can, I want to try. Because just like all women are bound by blood, and all humanity is bound by us, the needs continue, and so does our power to meet them in each other.
Thank you for the listener essay. We desire all to receive it. And if you want to vote for it, go to the website and vote for it and give the author some feedback. And then tune in again tomorrow, because we'll be doing this all over again with a brand new listener essay. I'll have all the long-winded fancy details as an Easter egg, so you can skip over it if you want, or listen to it if you want. It'll be there after Zoe says, "Thank you for listening to Infants on Thrones."
Because that's how we roll.
Hi, this is Hillary.
Matthew Ryan.
Carol.
Keith.
Ashley. And I like to play bingo online while listening to Infants on Thrones.
You can comment on this episode on the website, infantsonthrones.com.
And if you really like what you hear,
consider supporting us on Patreon for as little as $1 per episode, capped at whatever total amount you want to cap that at. I mean, where do you think the money is coming from to award prizes to the listener essays, huh? Pretty cool stuff we're doing on Infants on Thrones. Also,
give the Quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes.
I did. Anyone for the closing prayer?
Thank you for listening to
Infants on Thrones.
Infants on Thrones.
Well, that was a great listener essay, wasn't it? Ready to go vote for it? Now, if you've heard this before and you're an old pro at voting for these essays, you can just skip over this part. Now, here's how this is going to work. As it stands right now, I have 14 listener essays, and that means that for the next 2 weeks, starting today, February 7th, ending on February 20th, you will be hearing one listener essay per day, at least for those of you who listen in real time once the episode is released. And FYI, some of these essays were submitted to us without a title, So I gave them a title myself. So if you think the title of the essay is stupid, well, that's probably my fault, because damn if I don't love me some stupid. But here's the really exciting part. One of these 14 essays will win $218, because it's 2018 now, and we like to be cute and stupid about things, but we're not able to award a $2,000 prize just yet, okay? Another essay will win $109, half of the 218, and I think I actually got the math right this time, I think. And a third will win $50. And you listeners get to choose who these winners will be. And you'll also be able to give private feedback to each author. So here's how that's going to happen. After you listen to the essay today, go to our website, infantsonthrones.com. Find the post for the essay that you listen to, and be sure that you have the author's name and the essay title right so that your feedback goes to the right place. Click on the survey that's associated with that essay, and it's going to be there on the post. Fill out the survey and submit it, and then sit back and breathe in and breathe out and feel life's energy flow through you and bask in the warm feeling of knowing that you made a difference in the life of someone brave enough to submit a listener essay to Infants on Thrones. Now, when you fill out these surveys, you're going to be asked two things primarily. One, to rate the essay on a scale of 1 to 5. And then you'll also have the opportunity to write in some of your thoughts, some of your feedback for the author. It'll only take a few minutes, and then boom, you're done. Now, you can do this for every single essay, every single one of these 14 essays. You can vote, or you can put your feedback for each one of these 14 essays, but you can only vote once for each essay. Does that make sense? Okay. Now, voting will be open through the entire month of February, even though the essays will stop on the 20th. You'll still be able to vote for the last week or so of February. On March 1st, voting will be closed, and then the winners will be announced on Saturday, March 3rd. Now, some of you may be wondering, is there a deadline for submitting essays? Well, no, not really. Now, this contest with these 14 essays, that will end with the final essay being released on February 20th, but my hope is that as you listen to these essays, you will feel inspired to make one yourself and share your unique view of the world with the rest of our listening audience. So if you want to do that, submit it, and as soon as we get another 10 to 15 essays, we'll start another contest. How's that? Make sense? Pretty good deal, huh? And isn't that really how the world's supposed to work anyway? I mean, think of it like this. It could be kind of like if you were kneeling at an altar and you looked up and you saw this big mirror on the wall in front of you. And in that mirror, you could see not only your own reflection looking back at you, but you could see the reflection of the mirror on the wall behind you and the back of your head. And then in that reflection, you also saw another reflection of yourself, both front and back, stretching outward and onward, upward throughout all generations of time and throughout all eternity, like Rey in the new Star Wars movie, if Rey had been at an altar and married herself. Can you marry yourself? What is that, Master Wedshin? I don't know, in some kind of a weird Mormon Jedi temple ceremony thing that distinguishes one type of nerd from other types of nerds. That's kind of what this essay contest is like. No, I don't know. Will it end? Can you submit essays forever and ever and be like Rey? I don't know. See, what did I tell you? I love me some stupid. So this is the deal. Infant Listener Essay Contest. Please participate and make this thing super special, because special isn't just a euphemism anymore, or something remarkable like that.
Hi, this is Hillary.
Matthew, Ryan,
Carol,
Keith,
Ashley,
and I like to play bingo online while listening to Infants on Thrones.
You can comment on this episode on the website, infantsonthrones.com.
And if you really like what you hear,
consider supporting us on Patreon for as little as $1 per episode, capped at whatever total amount you want to cap that at. I mean, where do you think the money is coming from to award prizes to the listener essays, huh? Pretty cool stuff we're doing on Infants on Thrones. Also,
give the Quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes.
I did.
Anyone for the closing prayer?
Thank you for listening to... Infants on Thrones.